My name is Betty Ann Davis. I am a midwife. I've been a midwife for 18 years out of the system, and for the last 18 years I've been a midwife within the system in Canada, where I am required by my Ministry of Health to provide both home and hospital birth, paid for by our Ministry of Health.
Hi, I'm Ken Johnson. Thanks for being here at 5 o'clock on a Monday afternoon. That's awesome to see so many people. I'm an epidemiologist. I work at the Public Health Agency of Canada, and I do research on tobacco and breast cancer by day, and midwifery research and perinatal stuff by night. I've noticed several patterns as an epidemiologist. I've noticed several patterns over the years presenting here. Eugene de Klerk always presents first. He always has cool data. He always has cool results. He always gives a very cool talk. And I think he should be congratulated for that. He's always doing some, this is a tremendous new study he's involved in. I think it's going to be have fabulous impact.
My only disclaimer is I didn't put the timing in. I'm not.
That's all right. So our study today is on the economic case for midwifery care and home birth, the large savings that we'll suggest there are large savings from the place of changing the place of birth sum, resulting from both place of birth, lower prematurity, and lower cesarean rates. Page 10. The co-authors on this paper are first Betty Ann, who just introduced herself, and beside her are charter members of the Betty Ann Davis Home Birth Celebration Club. And our other co-author is David Anderson. He's an economist from Centre College in Virginia. He does not have a fan club, apparently, as you can see. As an overview, we're going to first look at some of the data around cesarean rates, then we're going to look at prematurity rates, then we'll look at out-of-hospital, the impact on out-of-hospital costs of changing the number of out-of-hospital births, then we'll look at the other cost savings, and then look at a couple other issues.
So, 1985, this is when the World Health Organization first came out with the statement that there's no justification for any region to have cesarean section rates higher than 10 to 15%. That was like 15 years after it was like about 5.5%. And then we were delighted to see this article come out in 2007 that showed that 15% is still a marker below which there is a correlation with increased maternal mortality and perinatal mortality, but above which risks to reproductive health outcomes may begin to outweigh benefits. Of course, this was talking largely, we noticed that in some of the low-resource countries, when you lower your cesarean rate too much, you're going to have babies die. But in the other countries, we started realizing, there's a time which cesarean becomes a liability. And but this particular study does apply to women from all high or low-resource countries. So what we decided to do was we wanted to look at low risk. What about low risk? Because the World Health Organization always takes the larger population of high and low risk. And so we wanted to figure out what is considered low risk in North America. And generally, just, you know, Ken and I did a study that was published in 2005. It was published, it was a home birth study on the certified professional midwives in North America, which included almost, it was almost all American midwives, 2% were Canadian. And that study, which is what we're talking about in the second bullet point, and so from our home birth data in the BMJ, we found that about 93.6% were considered low risk. In other words, only 6.4% left for medical reasons. And the large three indications for consideration of high risk is prematurity, a baby that's not singleton, in other words, triplets or twins. And the third one is vertex baby, is obviously low risk, whereas breech or transverse is not. And so this is one of the things we realize that should happen is in that group, we think it, the cesarean section rate should be lower than the global 10 or 15% because they're low risk, right? So here are these cesarean section rates. Look at that 1970 when all of us, most of us here were alive, I think born by then.
No. Speak for yourself there.
About a third of that crowding.
Okay, over there, no. I'm still doing intake at the midwife. They still look like they're all... you're right, 78, they're all born now. Okay, so now, look at this, 31.8%. I think it's going up even more.
No. Now, if you don't believe this data, we actually have it on high authority.
Right.
Here we have... Now, this is from the internet, so I'm sure it's true. We have a world authority here who's stepped in just for a moment to give us some expert advice. In 2006, cesarean rate was the same. If it had been the same as 1996, there would have been almost 500,000 less cesareans. So that's how much impact that increasing rate has had. The cesarean rates are higher in the South. I also have that on good authority.
But he doesn't have a tie on.
He does today.
He does today.
I undermine my authority.
You'll also notice that maternal mortality has gone up in the U.S. more than it's whereas in other industrialized countries it hasn't gone up, and that's probably related. And finally, that the reason for the increasing cesarean rate is not because of maternal requests for cesarean.
So this is just to highlight a few of the things we're talking about. Look, the slide over here is about Ohio. It shows that this is for low risk. Keep in mind, always we're looking at low and then high risk. 27% cesarean section rate, first time mumps. The next slide, the next little picture is 40% of all births in New Jersey are by cesarean. And the slide down to the bottom there, that's just looking at the record of liability lawsuits and the record of cesarean section. Cesarean section is a blue line, so it's constantly going up, and lawsuits don't seem to necessarily jive with that particular entity in the United States of America. It looks like cesarean sections are going up regardless of whether lawsuits are happening or not. Now, this is a slide that we have used for many years. It's a slide that shows the intervention rates of the CPM stands for Certified Professional Midwives. This was a study that we did in 2000 for all the CPM's births at home. And we compared that to low-risk U.S. women from the NIH data and also from the Listening to Mothers data. And the yellow bars are the home birth data, and the red, hospital birth data, and the red is the home birth data. And you can see how much lower the intervention rates. In particular, you should look over at the C-section rate way over on the three over from the right. The C-section rate is 3.7%, and this is for low-risk women, and at that time it was 19% in hospital, also low-risk women. This is comparing, we've actually added some births to this, now we've added some studies to this, but this was the original data we were looking at when we were trying to publish an article on cesarean section rates. And here you see the C-section rate for out-of-hospital births. It's very low, 4.4, 6.6, 2.1, you see how low that is. It's usually actually 3 or below, but in the article from BC it was 6.4%. And then you look at the C-section rate for the matching hospital births, and what that means is low-risk women. So low-risk women in hospital, even though they're low-risk, the cesarean section rate is considerably higher. Look at the Schlenska study, 6.6 at home, 18.9 for the others. And the same with ours down below, which we talked about in the last slides, 3.7 versus 19. And then the overall C-section rate is the last column that shows that for, that would be C-section rates for all women, regardless of their risk status. So these were our conclusions. There's about a one-third to one-ninth cesarean section rate for planned out-of-hospital births compared to low-risk hospital birth under obstetric management. All right? And the cesarean benchmark that we have come up with for low-risk women is 2 to 7%. And that may sound like it's very low, but these are low-risk women. So we're talking about the WHO stat of between 10 and 15%. For low-risk women, we can see that with home births, you can reduce that considerably. And so this woman, who's looking very happy after her birth, obviously she's very delighted that her doctor has got her baby out safely, but we, as midwives, we receive these women afterwards, 2 years later, they're wondering if that cesarean section really was necessary, right? And the larger statistics to make it worse. Okay, now this is, now we're going to start to talk about infant deaths, because we're now thinking about the overall picture. So here we go. Number of infants in the U.S. dying in their first year has been falling steadily to year 2000, but has been starting to drop off. At 2000, is starting to level out. Here we show the rates, not just higher for blacks, but about twice the rate of infant deaths for African-American women. And you see how the U.S. ranks, of course. You were talking about after Slovakia, but after... And we're talking here, even Cuba has got a lower rate of infant death than the United States. And we all know preterm babies are harder to keep alive. I'll keep going on this. So here we go. There are more preterm deaths, and we know that there are higher infant death rates with these preterm deaths.
You can see there that the preterm death rate has actually gone up from 1981 to the year 2007.
Even though it was going down originally, up to the year 2000. And this is just showing where the prematurity is more in the southern states, similarly to the cesarean section rates. They're higher in the southern states. And here's from March of Dimes, the data we have. 10,058 babies are born preterm.
Every week.
1,620. This is the average week. You can see that you can go right across there. Go through that slide fast. Again, preterm birth rates higher in the southern states. The lighter, or the darker the color there, the higher the term or preterm death rate. We've just started to look at premature births in home versus hospital, and it was actually quite by surprise. We didn't realize this data was going to come up when we first did our study on home birth, but we found that the premature rate, for some reason, was 4% compared to the hospital rate around the same time period of 2000 and 2001, which was 11.3%. We found the same thing in the BMJ study that was done by Andrew Simon when he was comparing the home birth data from independent midwives in Britain to the NHS data in Scotland. You notice it's very similar. And we have that in a few other studies, but we don't have it very well laid out yet. But we think we've been working on that with Jane Sandel in Britain. She's also noticed that, and we thought at first perhaps the prematurity was due to continuity of care, but it doesn't seem to be just due to that.
And that's prematurity in low-risk women.
Yeah.
So here we have what's going to go into our cost estimates and potential cost savings. We have, how are we doing here, Barbara?
You've got about 7 minutes. Can you do it?
Working. Maybe.
Yeah. No, we're good.
We'll have to, Marvin.
Yeah.
We'll have to. So the average hospital birth cost of a birth in hospital is about $8,500 currently. At home, it's about $2,300, and in birth center, about $5,300. That's the first thing going into.
Second, Canadian figures.
These are American. This is all American data. Cesarean rates of 19% in hospital for low risk women is less than we have from our 2000 data. 3.7% at home in the same for low-risk women, and 4.4% in the hospital or the birth center births in that data set. And reduced low birth weight, 2.4% in the hospitals, but lower at home and in birth centers. If you take those numbers and create a scenario where you suggest that just 5% of U.S. births, 5% more of U.S. births were at home and 5% more U.S. births were in birth centers, so a total of probably around 11.5% of births were at home or planned to be at home or be in birth centers, you'd increase the number of out-of-hospital births by about 430,000 in the U.S. per year. If you did that, the place of birth alone would save you $1.3 billion for home births, an additional $675 million for birth center births, for a total of essentially $2 billion saving just by changing the planned place of birth. Now, we originally came up with this because of Obama was putting out that he wanted better care and more efficient care and savings. So we actually went down to Washington to present on this with a group of other people and suggested that this was probably about as efficient as you could get, one of the greatest ways to save money in the healthcare system. If you then look at the impact of the reduced cesarean rate, we just had another line on the bottom of the chart. We had another $341 million estimated saved. If we had the reduced prematurity, we're looking at every child that goes into the NICU costing on average about $15,000. So we'll add another $84 million in savings. And that comes out to a grand total for increasing the home births rate by five more percent of the U.S. births to $1.5 billion saved for planned home birth, almost $1 billion for birth center births, for a total of $2.4 billion saved just by moving the place of birth. Now, this group is called the Big Push. They're actively working to get CPMs licensed in all states. I think they've been successful. We now have licensed CPMs in about 25 states who do both home births and often birth center births as well. And these are the movers and shakers in that organization. Something we haven't figured in is all the other negative sequelae associated with cesarean births. The Childbirth Connection has done a beautiful job of documenting those. In terms of if you have a vaginal birth, there's three sequelae that they noted that you were worse off because you had a vaginal birth. First, urinary incontinence. Secondly, anal incontinence and brachial plexus injuries in the babies. However, when you turn to cesarean, you have a list for the child, those three, and for mothers, not only these ones, but these ones as well. And we could talk about this all day, and I only have 4 minutes, so we won't.
I appreciate that.
Then you look at with previous cesarean, the impact down the road, and I'm sure Jean's going to have great data about all this to firm up some of that information. But basically, 33 health issues associated with cesarean and only three with vaginal, and none of those are figured into those cost estimates. There was another study in Washington State where they looked at Medicaid data, and basically they came up with these costs for different places of birth based on the Medicaid reimbursement. And I won't go into the details of that. Now I'd like to turn to something else that would have a huge impact on costs of health care in the U.S. for both birth and other costs, and that's related to not having universal single-payer not-for-profit health care in this country. And on Saturday I was just at the annual general meeting in Washington of the Physicians for a National Health Program, who have done tremendous work. If the government really was for the 99%, when Obama suggested improving health care, he would have gone straight to this group, which has been working on it for about 20 years, brilliant, capable people, and who have done a tremendous amount of work in this area. But because it is still for the 1%, we see a very different picture. This is just highlight some of their major conclusions, always referenced with articles often in the New England Journal of Medicine. Steffi Woolhandler and David Himmelstein are the two mains in that, and they're docs who work out of Cambridge. Administrative costs in the U.S. consume 31% of U.S. health spending, most of it unnecessary. And here's a comparison of Canada and the U.S. Being Canadian, I am a firm believer in universal single payer because I live in a system with it and it's just great. Here is the amount of private expenditure is the dark color, and the green is public expenditure. And what is shocking to them when they actually did the analysis is even in the U.S. you spend more per capita. Over $2,500 comes out of the public purse to go towards health care, and then additionally, a total much higher when you add in the administrative costs or the private costs that go into the U.S. health care system. Canada, it's quite a bit different. Oh, I keep hitting that. This is a remarkable slide because it shows what happened to healthcare between 1960 and 2002 in the U.S. and Canada. In about 1960, Canada and the U.S. both had about, on the left-hand chart, about 6% of gross domestic product was spent on health care. Canada got universal not-for-profit single-payer health care in the late 60s, and you can see that the red line trended out around 9.5%, but you can see that the U.S., where you didn't get that, it just continued to go up, 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 and is still going up. On the right-hand side, you see what percentage of the public expenditure in that. I'm running out of time, so I won't show more of that.
See if you can slip to where you're going.
Well, this is probably where I need to go.
Okay, yeah, because I think you're going to have to.
Okay, yeah. Healthcare profits. Are you crazy? A government healthcare system would be a bureaucratic nightmare. And there are all the people working in the private system denying benefits in the private system. Medical bills contribute to half of all personal bankruptcies. Three-fourths of those bankruptcies had health insurance at the time they got sick or injured. Finally, despite spending far less per capita for health care, Canadians are healthier and have better measures of access to health care than Americans. And I think the one thing they missed on this is that all Canadians play hockey, and that probably is a confounding factor that also increases our health. Finally, business pays less than 20% of our nation's health bill. It's a misnomer that our health system is privately financed. 60% is paid by taxes, and the remaining 20% is out-of-pocket payments. I would like to finish on the Occupy slide. I think the Occupy movement is incredibly important, as did the Physicians for a National Health Plan, because as long as the 1% makes the decisions about health care, we are not going to get where we need to be with health. These are the conclusions. Again, that $2.4 billion would be saved if we just by increasing to 10% more out-of-hospital births. Thank you.
Thank you.